RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and it is UFC 257 week, and we are going to get you ready for the fight card here on this edition of the MMA Report podcast, and we are powered by DraftKings. Come up here later on in the show. I'm going to tell you about the deal that DraftKings has for the MMA Report podcast listener. Daniel, Conor McGregor is back. Are you hyped?
Oh, I'm super hyped, man. I got done watching the UFC Countdown show finally last night, and it's hard not to watch that and not get hyped. I mean, they just do such a phenomenal job, and I think one of the reasons why I'm hyped, Jason, is I think because of the pandemic, it's really stretched the Countdown show thin. So a great portion of it is just going back in the histories of both fighters. And Jason, what really got me hyped is watching that Countdown show is going down memory lane and watching all of the great moments of both Conor's career and Dustin's career. And I mean, Conor in particular is a man who's provided several special moments. And so it's hard not to get hyped about him potentially doing it once again. And also to get the hype meter even more hyped, we have a debuting former Bellator champion, Michael Chandler, going up against a tough lightweight who, if it was a different judge in his last fight, could have seen himself in this night's main event.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's, you know, in terms of the pay-per-view, those are two fights that I am interested to kind of see how they do play out. You know, I'm kind of wondering on the, you know, after the way the first fight ended for Dustin Poirier, of what is that going to look like? What, you know, the psyche of what that's going to be. And, you know, we know that, you know, what is on the line here, of kind of, you know, leading into last Saturday's card. You know, Dana White, you know, gave the master tease of how we were going to know the future of Khabib Nurmagomedov, and it was just an extreme letdown. But I will say this in terms of, you know, the lack of an announcement that we had last week, Daniel, on that one, to me, I think it tells you that the likelihood that Khabib Nurmagomedov is coming back to defend the UFC lightweight title, I think is greater than 70%.
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever Dana went on TV and he basically said, I don't even know if he said it was a maybe, right? He just said Khabib was going to wait and see. Even when people, I think, were throwing at him the maybe question, you could kind of tell, even though he wasn't saying it, I mean, there was great confidence from Dana White that Nurmagomedov was going to fight again. And I think a big reason why is in this sport, if you're going to retire, you better close the door, lock it, get a bolt, attach it to the door, and lock that too. You got to shut that thing down pat. If you just leave that door a little bit open, Dana White or Scott Coker with a big old bag ready to put money in is going to break through that door, grab you by the neck, and bring you back into the spotlight. And I think Nurmagomedov's got that door pretty damn open, Jason, with the way he's talking about, like, he's just going to be sitting in his own private room and just, you know, watching the fights and seeing if anyone is worthy. So I think Nurmagomedov is absolutely going to fight again. I think he's going to fight, you know, I think if Conor wins, I think without a doubt, that's the fight to make, and it will happen. I think if Michael Chandler beats Dan Hooker, I could definitely see that fight. So those are the two fights I'm looking at. And I just feel bad for Charles Oliveira, because Charles Oliveira to me is just like the third guy that's just always mentioned, where like Dana's like, well, yeah, he was impressed by Oliveira, but he's going to watch these next two fights to see if anyone impresses him. And it's like, man, Charles is pretty damn impressive against old Ferguson.
I'll tell you, stylistically, I'd be really intrigued to see what Khabib versus Charles Oliveira look like. I mean, look, you know, spoiler alert, I think Conor's going to win on Saturday night. You know, and so I think that the UFC and Dana White are going to do whatever they can to push Khabib Nurmagomedov to take the rematch against Conor McGregor, because it is the biggest fight the UFC can make. And, you know, watching the interview that Conor did with Ariel Helwani, I mean, the first, like, the WTF moment of this is Conor talking about how, you know, he was never crowned the unified champion because he left the ring before that was actually happening. I'm like, oh my goodness. But I will tell you this, my two biggest takeaways from that conversation that he had with Ariel Helwani, one was I was very surprised to hear Conor say that he was intrigued and very much wanted to fight in an empty arena. That's just something I would not have expected to hear out of Conor McGregor. I just would have thought that, you know, he would, you know, thrive on, you know, a packed building. And of course there'll be about 2,000 people in attendance on Sunday morning there in Abu Dhabi, Saturday night here in the United States. But the other kind of takeaway was when basically he turned the tables on Ariel and said, "Hey, why are you not in Fight Island?" And it was just this awkward moment where Ariel clearly did not want to say why he's not on Fight Island.
Yeah, leave it. You know, I'm glad they at least left that in the show. They could have very easily have cut that out, but it was a good interview. And, well, it was okay. I mean, Ariel tried his best. I don't think Conor in that interview was – I think Conor's a lot more reserved than he once was. Like, he still has that confidence, and if he gets egged on, he will say something braggadocious. But it wasn't as captivating as early Conor, which is probably a good sign for what we're going to see inside the cage, because – it seems like the narrative that we're spinning, and this narrative should probably, well, it's probably accurate, is that Conor is quote unquote focused again, that he wasn't focused against Nurmagomedov. And I tell you what, if I had a dollar for every time a fighter coming off a loss wasn't focused in training camp and heading into a fight was, I would be richer than Elon Musk. I would be the richest man in the world. Okay. So we hear that all the time. But it does seem like with the head shaved and within this interview, there Conor has matured as much as Conor can mature. It's a sliding scale, right? Like, Conor has matured, but you probably wouldn't want him to babysit your children. But he can definitely entertain them inside the cage. So I thought it was a good interview for sure, because literally Conor content is just captivating. I think Conor, you know, I've been thinking a lot about Muhammad Ali lately, and I think a big reason why was I saw this movie called One Night in Miami that was about Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown. One night they spent together after Ali's Sonny Liston fight. And then I watched that movie, and then I watched the ABC show, and you saw the Wide World of Sports, and as an aspiring pro wrestler, I really dig Muhammad Ali because he really was a star and he really transcended the sport and he was a figure. And I say all this because, you know, Conor is very similar to Muhammad in that he also is that star that transcends the sport, where his actions outside of the cage are so memorable to people, and he's such a peculiar individual. You saw the way he arrived at Fight Island shirtless. You sent me that. And so I don't know what I'm saying other than what I'm saying is that I it's interesting that while I was spending this time thinking about Muhammad Ali, the current version of someone who's kind of close to that as a cultural standpoint is fighting this week.
That is so on brand with Conor McGregor to roll into the W Hotel there on Fight Island with no shirt on. I saw that clip. I just started laughing. And, you know, look, I'll tell you this, as, you know, someone who works for a restaurant group, you know, and I can tell you this, our three restaurant/bar properties will all have the UFC pay-per-view coming up on Saturday. Daniel, the last time we bought a pay-per-view, 1 year ago.
It was just fight against Cerrone?
Yep.
Yeah. And that was going to be such a big year for him, right? I mean, he laid out his year. It was a huge start to the year in the UFC. And then shortly after, we had that pandemic go on. So, I mean, this is a big fight. I think win or lose, Conor maintains his value. And at the end of the day, like, we're talking a lot about Conor, but on the other side of the cage is a guy who, you know, okay. So here's the interesting thing. Like, with Conor, we have a guy who's telling us he got back his focus, right? with Dustin Poirier, it's like I look at a guy who's never lost his focus. Like, you never have to worry about if Dustin Poirier is checked in or checked out of a camp. And that's a big advantage for Poirier, because we're not talking about a Donald Cerrone type. We're talking about a guy whose resume is pretty damn impressive. I mean, a former champion, an interim champion, so whatnot, but a 10-plus year career. And he's got wins over Gaethje and Alvarez and Holloway. He's coming off the win over Hooker. Poirier throughout his career has been one of the most exciting fighters in the UFC. And I think this – and by the way, just a phenomenal person with what he does with the good fight. I mean, just – I mean, a man of the year, you know, if we had a similar award as the NFL does. But for Dustin, when I see this guy, this is a scrappy dude who is like, there's a real chip on his shoulder. And I think one of those chips has to go back to UFC 178 and the way in which he lost to Conor McGregor. Poirier's had a couple knockout losses, and those have to just not sit right with him. So I really think that while all the attention is on Conor, don't sleep on Dustin Poirier, whose boxing is pretty damn good, who's really good when he faces adversity in the cage. He has the ability to survive an onslaught and win later in fights. And I think when you look at Dustin Poirier, it kind of fits the narrative of his career to have that early loss to Conor, when no one's counting him to win this fight and the spotlight isn't on him. It's kind of within his narrative for Dustin the Diamond Poirier to shine like a diamond in this moment and beat Conor when the world expected McGregor just to return to form, when a guy like Poirier never lost it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 6 years ago was that first meeting back at UFC 178. Of course, you know, that was at 145 pounds. This one at 155 pounds. I think one of the memories I have of that fight week is I just thought that Conor was so in the head of Dustin Poirier, and just and you go back and you watch that fight, and Dustin was never in the fight. It was a one-sided fight, only goes a minute and 46 seconds. You know, it's crazy to think that that was 6+ years ago, and you look at kind of the trajectory of both of these fighters heading into this one, and I think, Daniel, everyone would agree with this statement that the first round favors Conor McGregor. But if this fight gets into the third, fourth, and potentially fifth round, it is favored Dustin Poirier.
Yes, I think so, and that's within, even still taking into account, I think one of the other stories that's been pushed in the media within the Countdown show, and also Mark Raimondi wrote an article about this for ESPN. And one of the things that's being pushed was about how Conor's really continued to take his conditioning serious, where he imported a couple of guys. I believe it was from Shinobi. One was like a cyclist, and somebody else. I should have written down what their jobs were, but basically they are the people in charge of him from a physical standpoint. They kind of pulled down the reins in terms of, they were saying what Conor was doing in his preparation before they got involved was overworking himself, not treating his body right, essentially pouring diesel into a sports car. And so from a scientific standpoint, after the first Nate Diaz loss, they came in and they really gave him a scientific process of how to get his cardio at the best possible place. So I think that's why you've seen a better conditioning from Conor McGregor. I think a lot of it is mental too. I think they've taught him how to use his body and pace himself. So even in those later rounds, I still do favor Dustin Poirier. It's like he gets stronger, and it's like he's just as dangerous as he is in round four as he is in round one. So even though I favor him, I think it's going to be close, because I think Conor's gas tank and conditioning has improved dramatically since bringing these guys into the fold. And I've gone back and forth in this fight, and I think one of the reasons why I'm leaning towards Conor is outside of the cage, he's really, really invested in his team, where they all went to Portugal. They have all these guys on the payroll: Owen Roddy, the striking, Sutcliffe, the boxing coach, Kavanaugh, the MMA guys, his own personal photographer. I mean, this is very LeBron James like, with the way LeBron James has his own team on salary just to serve him. This fight camp, from the outside looking in, and I know every fight camp before a fight looks damn tremendous, but this one in particular looks very, very like they're dotting every I and crossing every T. And that's why I have kind of confidence that Conor will return to form and will fight just like he did the very last time we saw him, where he just ran through Cerrone.
Yeah, I mean, that's I want to say it was maybe in an interview that Aaron Bronister did with Conor, and he talked about, you know, when he saw what LeBron James was doing in terms of, you know, the amount of money he was spending to maintain his body. And Conor basically knew that, you know, I was doing that during fight camp. I wasn't doing it year round. Now he's doing it year round. I want to get your take on something I saw yesterday, and this was posted on the ESPN MMA Twitter account. It was a clip from DC and Helwani, where Ariel Helwani said, quote, "I'm sure the internet's going to get so mad at me saying this. I think that Conor McGregor is one of the most underrated fighters in the history of the sport. McGregor does not get the credit he deserves for his skills." Daniel, I agree with Ariel.
Dude, I do too. And the thing is, before I saw Ariel say that, and also Michael Chandler said something very similar, where Michael Chandler in the media scrum basically said Conor isn't as good as he thinks he is, but he's better than everyone else does, right? And that, along with Ariel, is correct. And you know why I agree with that sentiment is that when I was rewatching the countdown show, and you just go through the fact that Conor McGregor beat Poirier, Mendez, Aldo, Alvarez, the way in which he beat him, it's like, damn, this dude is special. When you watch the highlights, it's like, this dude is special. His striking is like unreal. I think a reason why he might be underrated is twofold, Jason. The first reason, and the most important reason, is that in so many of these fights, these big moments, Conor McGregor comes in as an underdog. Or at least he's doubted that he will win these fights. I feel like that's the case. Secondly, there isn't a lot of championship fights. Like, he's had fights, but this is a guy who's been on the championship level since about 2015. And within that time period, he's had 7 total fights. He's gone 5-2 since he's been a championship level fighter fighting for championships. So that's a small quantity of fights. I think those are the two big reasons why, with also the caveat being his matchups have been really nice. I mean, he's only faced a handful of wrestlers like Mendez and Nurmagomedov come to mind. So those are the big reasons why. But when you look at what he's done, it's downright special. I mean, why do you think Conor's underrated?
I just think that people, I think, discredit his overall skills. I mean, and I tell people, go back and watch the fight against Khabib. I mean, his takedown defense was better than what you would expect it, you know, going into that fight. You know, and I think that part of the reason he's underrated is that because there's so much, when we talk about Conor McGregor, so much is always about kind of the antics, you know, of how he promotes himself, how he, you know, sells a pay-per-view. So, I mean, look, I when I look at this fight, I think if this fight, if you tell me this fight is over in the first 10 minutes, I would tell you, okay, it's going to be a Conor McGregor win. I just, you know, and I talked about this earlier in the show. I think it's the psychology of Dustin Poirier. After you get dominated by someone in the manner he was dominated against, and yes, it was 6 years ago, and Dustin Poirier is a better fighter, but also Conor McGregor is a better fighter as well. I do wonder if that American Top Team coaching staff, how much of this game plan is going to be, let's try to make this a grappling type fight. Let's try to wear down Conor McGregor. But to me, this is going to be a Conor win. I think you're going to see Conor McGregor, you know, call out Khabib Nurmagomedov in his post-fight interview. But if Dustin Poirier goes out there and gets the victory, that makes things a lot of interesting. You know, what happens in the co-main event? You know, I would have to think that if Michael Chandler gets a win, Michael Chandler will be right there in line. But Charles Oliveira, I mean, you can't discredit this guy. So there's a couple of challengers there. And one last thing we want to mention about Conor McGregor is, you know, what is the roadmap for him in 2021? Let's say he gets the win. You know, he's mentioned about fighting maybe 3-4 times. I find that hard to believe, Daniel. I would think the likelihood would be two. I mean, three, I guess, if he's lucky in terms of timing on this one. But to me, I think if he gets a win, the roadmap is we're probably looking June, July of the UFC trying to make Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I think, look, I'll give you two roadmaps. And again, let's remember, Conor McGregor had his 2020 outlined, and then he fought Donald, and then, well, we know what happened then. So here are the two roadmaps. Are you ready? One roadmap, he fights three times. Conor beats Dustin Poirier. He then fights in the summer against Khabib Nurmagomedov. He loses that fight. He no longer, his last fight isn't in the octagon. It is in a boxing ring. And it's towards the end of the year. And I think he fights Manny Pacquiao on pay-per-view. The other one, he loses to Poirier. And then he just doesn't fight again the whole year. Those are the two roads I see. The third road is he loses to Poirier. Then he fights Diego Sanchez in his dream fight, Jason, and then he fights Jake Paul. Those are the three scenarios I got.
I had to laugh. I saw someone the other day after fights on Saturday said, you notice how Jake Paul, Logan Paul don't call out Max Holloway?
Dude, man. I mean, why would you want to do that? I mean, he's the man of 1,000 punches. I don't know where I saw that statistic, but it was something about how he had like 1% of all the total significant strikes in UFC history. I saw that. Somebody said that. I'm like, that can't be true. That can't be true. I need to fact check this one, because we're talking about UFC 257. There's 257 pay-per-view events, give or take, because I know there's a couple like 0.5s in there, and I know a couple shows got canceled, plus all the fight nights. I'm like, if that's true, 1% of all total significant strikes, that would be insane. But in terms of what's going to happen on Saturday night, Jason, look, I could see Poirier winning. This is not good for Conor, because I feel like throughout his career, I've literally picked against Conor in almost every single one of his fights. So this isn't good for him, because I'm picking him to win. And so I might be jinxing Conor, and I might be jinxing Dana White out of a lot of money. But Conor's predicted that he will finish this fight in under 60 seconds. I don't think he will do that. But I do think with his counter striking, he's going to catch Poirier. And even if Poirier tries to deploy the grappling, I think Conor will be able to defend the grappling attacks. And I think Conor's going to catch him with a counter and win via knockout.
Yeah, look, it would not surprise me if Conor goes out there in 60 seconds and gets to win. That would not surprise me the least. But I do want to let you know about our sponsor this week, and that is DraftKings. The return we have all been waiting for is finally here. One of the sport's most notorious icons is stepping into the octagon this Saturday. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the UFC, is giving you a free shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with your first deposit.
If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. You just pick six fighters, you stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about the football playoffs, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs this weekend. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience.
And I will tell you that the big DraftKings contest, GPP, on Saturday, $25 entry fee, $200,000 to first place. So download the DraftKings app now and use a promo code MMAReport to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the weekend. That's promo code MMAReport to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. You know, I'm all in the daily fantasy world. Actually, you know, before we started doing the show here today, I was doing a show on Awesomeo for, as we are doing this show while the UFC fight card is going on here on Wednesday morning. So, you know, we're always a full disclosure here. So we'll be talking, of course, all about UFC 257 here. And of course, towards the end of the show, We will touch on what happened last Saturday night on Fight Island. Of course, we briefly mentioned there Max Holloway getting the win against Calvin Kattar. Now, the co-main event is, you know, the other reason that I am excited about watching UFC 257 on Saturday night, Daniel, and that is Dan Hooker taking on Michael Chandler, the UFC debut of Michael Chandler. And, you know, not shocking that Dana White is going to throw a Bellator champion right to the fire here, taking on Dan Hooker. This is one of those fights that I really wonder, are we going to see the wrestler in Michael Chandler return? Because one of the things that could potentially be an issue for him in this matchup will be the length that Dan Hooker does have, as Dan Hooker has a 6-inch reach advantage.
Yeah, and that's what makes this fight a tough one to predict. I think on the feet, Hooker's the pick here. Sure, there's a scenario where Chandler comes in, gets in tight, and finishes this round in the first round with his strikes. I mean, we've seen him. He's seen what he's capable of with his power and his hand speed, for sure. But by and large, Hooker, who's just so well-versed with the stand-up and has displayed that against some of the best, and is just gritty and tough, and again, the physical advantage is there with the length. I think clearly a favorite on the feet, as good as Chandler is on the feet. So it really comes down, from my personal opinion, on Chandler's willingness to wrestle and success with it. I think he probably will have success with it, though. And I guess, I mean, this is a fight I see going the distance. And I think it's really going to come down to Hooker's ability to defend the takedown and get back up. But, you know, I don't think we can read too much into this fight in terms of defining the legacy of Michael Chandler. I think this is a guy whose legacy is already pretty set in stone. I mean, one of the best fighters in Bellator history and a great lightweight. He just has an incredibly tough task in front of him. I mean, Dan Hooker, when you look at like a graph of like name value and talent, the name value isn't there for Hooker, but the talent is championship level, right? Like, he, again, lost a close decision to Poirier. He could be in this main event. Instead, he's in the co-main event against Chandler.
Yeah, I mean, it's for Chandler, I guess the one thing that I can't escape my mind is him getting knocked out by Patricio Pitbull. I mean, and while that was, you know, a year and a half ago, it's something that I just keep kind of thinking there in terms of that. Also, kind of the story about this fight is Dan Hooker can't go back home to New Zealand for 2 months because of the COVID restrictions. He actually mentioned about how he wants to try to get a win here and then potentially do a quick turnaround, maybe fight in Vegas next month at one of those fight night cards. But, you know, look, I think that Chandler does have to wrestle here. I mean, look, he's going to have to get in the inside. I mean, it's simple math. Dan Hooker can sit at a range where Michael Chandler can't hit him, and he can hit Michael Chandler. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, does Michael Chandler try to make this a fight where a lot of it is up against the fence in this one? And look, if Chandler gets a win here, and it's a notable win, it's a spectacular win, and Dustin Poirier wins in the main event, Michael Chandler may be the guy that ultimately challenges Khabib Nurmagomedov next.
Yeah, I think if Poirier beats Connor, Chandler beats Hooker, I think Chandler's the pick for Nurmagomedov, and maybe we see Poirier versus Oliveira. I think Poirier, Khabib, the rematch just isn't as marketable, and it's going to come down to money. And again, I think we're all, you know, all signs point towards Connor and Nurmagomedov, but I mean, Chandler can put himself in a great position. I have a question. Has Chandler done broadcasting work, Jason? Because when I listen to the scrum, he seems like a guy who just has a great perspective on like the sport. And it's just really well spoken and very like self-aware of where he stands and stuff like that. Is this a guy who has done Bellator work? I don't remember him.
No, he has not. He has not. No, he's done no broadcasting. You know, Bellator really has never put many of their current fighters, you know, in those opportunities. But I mean, look, this is the reason why Michael Chandler wanted to come to the UFC. He was at a point in his career where it's like, look, the only way I can prove that I'm the best 155-pound fighter in the world is I have to go to the UFC. He's made plenty of money over the past, you know, 6-7 years fighting in Bellator. So this is why he's there. It's a huge opportunity for him. It will be very interesting tomorrow on Thursday when they do the press conference of kind of how this interaction is going to be. Will we get, you know, could we potentially see Conor McGregor take some stabs at Michael Chandler? He took a stab at him in the interview he did with Aaron Bronster, where I think Connor's line was something along the lines of, you know, well, he did well in a smaller league.
Well, that's a good one. I think he's an easy target for Connor, and there's a lot of material there. And if you're Chandler, I mean, you should lead into that, because if you get the Connor fight, I mean, that could be the fight for Connor if Connor loses. Right. I mean, I think if Connor loses, the next fight might be Nate Diaz. But I think to get in the fold is something Chandler should set up. I mean, to me, two things. Like, whenever Chandler, like, unfortunately for Michael, I literally, when I see the pre-fight hype, all I can think of is, damn, I want to see Patricio Pitbull in the UFC. That's what I'm thinking, to be honest with you. I want to see him go up against, you know, Max Holloway. Holy crap. And then the second Debbie Downer point is, man, I wish Eddie Alvarez was still in the UFC, because I would have loved to see a rematch between Chandler and Alvarez. I'm so sad we're not getting that. But regardless, I mean, Michael Chandler, win, lose, or draw, as a great addition to the UFC lightweight roster. And, you know, I'm picking Dan Hooker to win via decision. But I think Chandler has quite a few big fights ahead of him. And I think in terms of looking for another fight that gets you excited down the line, I mean, I want to see Chandler fight Justin Gaethje.
Yeah, that would be it. Yeah, that's a fight that even when, you know, Chandler was in Bellator and Gaethje was in the World Series of Fighting, that was a fight you want to see. I'm definitely with you. I mean, look, the reason I'm forking over probably my, I guess it'll probably be now $80 after taxes for this pay-per-view, because it was $74.13 before the price hike. So I'm guessing it's probably going to be close to $80 by the time, you know, when that charge hits a credit card bill to watch these. I'm watching it for the main event and co-main event. So, like, when I look at the rest of this card, I'm like, okay, what is the fight that's the third most intriguing fight to you as a fight fan? If I was going to make a pick, it might be Azatar and Frivola.
Ooh, I disagree, but talk to me about why you think Azatar Frivola is the number three fight.
Well, I mean, Azatar is coming off that great performance against Kama Worthy, where he just looked absolutely tremendous as an undefeated fighter who's now 2-0 in his career. Matt Frivola is a guy that I'm very aware of, a Tampa guy, does, you know, kind of do cross training between Tampa and also he's gone up to, you know, Sarah Longo. And, you know, he's a guy that obviously it's a grappling heavy base that he does have. You know, it has been, some time since we have seen Matt Frivola. We've not seen him since October of 2019. He's had some three canceled fights in 2020. One was when he was supposed to fight Roosevelt Roberts back in April. That event was ultimately canceled. Then he was supposed to fight in June. However, one of his corner men, which I believe was Billy Quarantillo, he tested positive for COVID. So that fight was canceled. Then they rebooked him to fight in September against Roosevelt Roberts, and then he suffered a foot injury, so he's out of it. So it's been a long time for Matt Frivola. I think stylistically it's an interesting matchup. Matt's got to grapple. If this becomes a striking matchup, the likelihood is Azatar will knock him out.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen, and that's a solid fight. I think the main card is solid. Like, there's nothing under it that's super-duper exciting, but every fight is solid. Jessica Ai, Joanne Calderwood is I think it's an interesting fight. I mean, those are two flyweights that we know a lot about and have a lot of tenure in the UFC. And you know, Ai's a little more controversial. Calderwood's a little more exciting as a fighter sometimes. By the way, on the prelims, don't sleep on these guys have serious flaws in their game, but Khalil Roundtree and Marcin Prochniel, I think, will probably be a really quick knockout, and keep an eye out for that. I think Roundtree will get a knockout. But I say all this to tell you, my number three fight is very clearly the women's strawweight fight between Marina Rodriguez and Amanda Ribas. First and foremost, Amanda Ribas sticks out to me as a clear fighter with star potential. in the UFC across any weight class. I think Amanda Ribas, when you look at her skill set, in addition to her performances against Dern and Marcos and PBZ, to go along with her personality outside of the cage, to go along with the fact that this is a fighter who very much, you know, it has that Brazilian, could be kind of that next Brazilian star. I think Amanda Ribas, that woman's strawweight, has star potential, and she's exciting. And she's going up against Marina Rodriguez, who is a fellow Brazilian fighter. And although she's coming, you know, it's been a while since I've seen her get her hand raised, she has been a part of some great fights. She really has, and she's very exciting. So I think Marina is going to lose this fight to Ribas. You know, Ribas is on the up and up. But Rodriguez, who's had much tougher challenges in the UFC, I mean, she's faced Esparza, Calvillo, Torres, and Aguilar. I think Marina's going to give Ribas a tough, tough fight. And so that's my number three fight. I think it's going to be a tough fight. I think it's going to be entertaining. And it features a fighter in Ribas who I think has star potential.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. And look, that's a great fight as well. I mean, that would be my other, you know, other fight that really does intrigue me. And it's very clear the UFC believes they have something in Amanda Ribas. I mean, you just look at, you know, since her last win, I mean, how many times have you seen Amanda doing some type of PR related to the UFC? You know, of course, I was back in July of last year when she defeated Paige VanZant, which, by the way, memo to everyone in Bare Knuckle, Lakeland, Florida is not Tampa, Florida. Just note. Yeah, they keep saying, oh, we're doing the event, Tampa, Super Bowl weekend. Bro, anyone who lives in Tampa, no one thinks Lakeland is Tampa. It's literally, here's the best way I describe it, Daniel. It's the halfway point between Tampa and Orlando, and it's a 90-minute drive from Tampa to Orlando.
Yeah, that's a great way of describing it. And you know, man, they're just trying to get off all that Super Bowl buzz.
Dude, I get it. I'm just telling you this. As someone who has traveled to, I mean, probably, I don't know, 6-7 Super Bowls, I'm telling you, if you are an event that is not centrally located to where everyone is staying, no one who's coming into town is getting in the car 45 minutes to go to your event.
Yeah, especially because they're in town to do so many other things. So that event is the day before the Super Bowl?
2 days before, to be the Friday.
That's kind of a smart. I mean, like, it would be great if it was in the city, right?
Well,
but I guarantee they couldn't find a venue.
Well, I think they probably could find a venue. I'm guessing they didn't want to pay the price for that venue.
Yeah. That's a poor way of wording it. They couldn't find a venue that made sense financially. I mean, that's what you see a lot of times, like with WrestleMania weekends, you'll see these independent wrestling promotions put on their own shows, but they won't be within the central hub city because they're, you know, they're major, you know, if it's New York City or wherever they did the show and whenever they went to the Giant Stadium, they couldn't run shows there because it was too damn pricey. So they would do it outside of the major hub city. So I think it's the same thing. But yeah, you got to get that off your chest, man. It's all about, we got to call out PR people when they do some malarkey.
By the way, speaking of wrestling, congrats on the play-by-play gig you got there, bro.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the, you know, we keep it real. We keep it 100. And yes, I will not be watching the Conor. Well, maybe I will be watching the Conor fight live, but I won't be watching most of the main card because I'll be doing commentary the same night.
I saw that on your social media. I was like, oh, kudos, Daniel.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. Yeah, man, people watch All Elite Wrestling. Some of the wrestlers on the AEW Dark show will be there in Kingsville. So thanks, man. I appreciate it. I feel very, very honored to do it. And, you know, it's a grind. We're all grinding, Jason. You're grinding every day of the week doing the awesome shows and so many other great stuff. And, you know, I feel like 2021 is going to be a big year for both of us. And I know it started out great with you and your Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, man. It's I will tell you to kind of give a little MMA side of this. I remember one of the times I was in Green Bay to do a game and where you stay in Appleton, Wisconsin when you go up to Green Bay. And it was 2011. It was the night of Chandler Alvarez won and Shogun and Dan Henderson that night. It's one of those nights in MMA I'll never forget.
Yeah, I don't think anyone who was watching one of those fights or both of them live will. I mean, it was one of the most special nights. I mean, you had the two top two. You had the top two fights of the year and two of the best fights of all time on the same night. And man, that Shogun Henderson. I mean, I think we talk a lot about Chandler Alvarez, and I mean Chandler Alvarez is a phenomenal fight, and it's a better fight in my opinion. But God, Shogun and Henderson, jeez, the way some of those, I mean, that was just a historic fight. But yeah, it's crazy to think, Jason, that was literally 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know. It's just it's amazing. It's you know, and I'll tell you, you know, I've been working for the Buccaneers Radio Network since 2004, so I've had the great pleasure to be able to travel around this country. Green Bay and Lambeau was like a bucket list item for me.
Yeah, dude, what was it like? Like, I can't even imagine.
It's a totally different feel. Like, there is just, it's quiet. It's not like your typical NFL stadium, you know, in terms of, you know, when we were non-COVID life. And, man, it would just be quiet. I remember, I don't know if it was that one or maybe the next time we went there, it was the first day of hunting season. And so, you know, we're just, you know, once you get the booth set up, a lot of it's just like sitting around, not really doing much. And one of my guys who works the sidelines, he goes, Jay, you got to come here, man. I was like, what's up, man? He goes, and so we could see the parking lot from the press box, and there was a dead deer on top of a car.
That is so Wisconsin. That's so Green Bay. That's perfect. That's gross, dude.
And half the people in attendance were in camo. Like, it was like they went out, they did their hunt in the morning, and then they came to the game in the afternoon.
How the hell are you? I mean, I'm no expert on this, but how the hell are you gonna leave your damn deer in the parking lot for 5 hours and then you're gonna
have no clue, bro? No clue, yeah, bro. Yeah.
Don't you have all these like flies? That's crazy, man.
It was one of those when I started traveling. It was it just because of Lambeau, man. You wanted to go to Lambeau, and I've you know, the only stadium that I think I've not been to would be two stadiums at this point. Would be, yeah, obviously the Vegas stadium, because you know, we have not traveled this year. We've been doing all the games remotely because of COVID. And SoFi Stadium in LA. So I know we go to LA next year. So, you know, I look forward to seeing that stadium next year.
Well, look, I'll tell you where I want to be. I wish I was connected, Jason, because I would give a lot of money to be in the building, be one of the few fans in the building for that Conor fight. Like, holy, can you imagine about, you know, hearing, just seeing one of the greatest fighters of all time, one of the biggest stars of all time, and you also are part of a small group of fans. I mean, it would be unbelievable to get a ticket to that show and just to watch and listen to the power of this dude. So, I mean, you know, in MMA, really, there aren't that many, like, bucket list venues you would want to go to, because we don't really think about the arenas too much outside of the arenas that are made famous via other sports like Madison Square Garden. But in terms of hottest tickets, I mean, to be one of the few fans in attendance this Saturday night, oh my God, that's I hope those people that are in the stands, they did a great job this past Saturday. I hope they really appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you definitely could tell after the fights last Saturday, Dana White was like, man, I missed this. I missed it, you know. And, you know, he even mentioned, he said, man, we messed up on some things in terms of production, which is always kind of interesting there. You know, when we talk about the preliminary card in terms of this one, I don't think, I mean, you mentioned about the Raonic Pacquiao fight. I mean, that fight has a chance to be bonkers between that one. I don't think there is a ton that I just sit there and say, man, you know, maybe just the Taruskian Haparas fight maybe is the one fight I would point to. Is there a fight on the prelims that really intrigues you?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the main event of the prelims, the one you just mentioned, Haparas and Tsarukyan. I mean, I think in the lightweight division. Both those fighters have great potential and have been pretty solid so far. I think Nasrat's the underdog, and he is my pick to win. I think Brad Tavares, Antonio Carlos Jr. are two middleweights who've seen better days, and I think one of them will round up to form. I think Roundtree Pacquiao is the most likely exciting fight, as I've mentioned before. I think largely because Pacquiao has gotten finished quite a bit, not afraid to stand and trade, and Khalil is quite deadly. The women's bantamweight bout between McMahon and Pena is also slightly interesting. It could be quite boring, but both those fighters have cachet in the 135-pound division, and this fight could be a fight for them to rebound. And then when you look at the early prelims, I mean, the one fight that sticks out is the undefeated Movsar Evloev going up against Nick Lentz, who you know, has a permanent residence on the preliminary card. So overall, the prelims are pretty lackluster. I mean, the main card and the main event, the co-main event, is what's driving the viewer to purchase this event.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And, you know, I don't have to get up bright and early on Sunday morning, so I don't have to, you know, worry about it if these fights go late. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching these fights coming up on Saturday night. Of course, so we do want to touch on what we saw happen last Saturday night at the UFC, or Saturday afternoon, I should say, with the UFC Fight Night card on ABC, Calvin Kattar, you know, just getting dominated by Max Holloway. Just an unbelievable performance there by Max Holloway. You know, one of the things I do want to mention, you know, when we talk about like takeaways from the card, one of my takeaways will actually be about Alessio Di Cherico. Bro, you got to take advantage. I understand where he's coming from, but also, like, there's times when, you know, someone gets knocked out, we do not need to put them on a microphone. I in a way, I understand what he's saying, but I'm like, dude, you're on ABC. You just knocked out a guy that everyone is so hyped for after, you know, his back-to-back knockouts. Bro, you got to take advantage of that microphone time.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't really put myself in Alessio de Chirico's shoes at all. I didn't understand his perspective. I mean, dude, of course we don't interview the loser. You want to interview? We cannot interview people, and I know it's been done lately. It's been done a couple times. You should not put a microphone in front of somebody's face who got knocked out. That's unethical. That's unethical. You know why? Because they're just, I mean, they literally just got knocked out. Like, who knows what they're going to say? They're still kind of getting their marbles, and sometimes they think they have them, but they don't realize they don't. So first off, Alessio, we don't interview people who get knocked out because that's just not ethical. But I get what he was saying in that he was paying respect. I mean, this is a guy who's been on the losing end heading into the Buckley fight. I think he's been feeling that, especially he lost a decision he probably should have won. So I respect the sentiment of, like, let's respect both competitors and it takes two to tango, et cetera, et cetera. It was a missed opportunity to promote himself, and it was just a huge win. I mean, everyone was expecting Buckley to run through Chirico, and Chirico landed a nice head kick, and just it's a reminder of how this sport can take everything away from you in a moment. I think Buckley will be fine. I think he'll come back and fight stronger, but you know, if Alessio was trying to get his point across, he definitely did. Dana White and the post-fight presser seem to have blown off the idea. But, you know, you don't need to complain in the media. Alessio, the MMA media loves to interview anyone and everyone we can get our hands on. So, I mean, that's something he needs to take up with the public relations department of the UFC. But, I mean, dude, I mean, that main card was a home run. A grand slam. He had knockouts to start and two great fights to end, and you capped it off with Max Holloway. Dude, Max Holloway, like, that was scary how good his stand-up was. I mean, to go up against one of the toughest featherweights in the division, Calvin Kattar, a really skilled fighter and a guy who's, you know, going to bounce back for sure, you know, to take 250-43 scorecards and 150-42 scorecard off him speaks to just how special Max is and the fact that it seems like kind of destiny that he's going to get back his championship.
Yeah, man, just a dominating performance by him. And you got to imagine that, you know, whoever comes out of the title fight there in March between Volkanovski and Ortega, they're going to have to go through Max Holloway because, you know, I mean, you know, to me, I thought he won the second fight against Volkanovski. And I think it's just a matter of time before we see those guys. You know, you mentioned another upset was, you know, Li Jianling getting the stop stoppage there in the first round against Santiago Ponzinibbio. You know, Ponzinibbio, first fight in 2+ years. Jolene, great win for him. You mentioned about Puno Soriano, great win for him, of course, noting in his post-fight interview there in the cage that maybe the fight went a little bit longer. Who knows if the gas tank would have been there. The bungalow fight of the night is Carlos Felipe and Justin Taffa. As a third round, these two big boys just start flinging the leather. That was a fun one to watch there. Austin Lingo bouncing back. You know, he had a good performance there against Jacob Kilborn. Vanessa Mel gets the win against Sarah Morris. You would imagine Sarah Morris will get cut there. Meev with another decision win. He's now 5-1 in the UFC, and all of his fights in the UFC have gone to decision. So I'm just going to say he might want to start finishing some fights, or otherwise he could find himself in the PFL in the not very near future. And then Carlos Khan and Matt Brown. Matt Brown obviously had a problem with a 30-27 scorecard, which I totally agree with him on that one. To me, it's 29-28. I mean, he clarified his comment. He's like, look, I didn't have a problem if you scored 29-28 for Carlos Khan. He goes, I just didn't see how I lost that fight 30-27. Condit now a free agent, but signs do kind of indicate that he is hoping to re-sign with the UFC.
Yeah, dude. That's right. Like, what the hell? How did three judges give round one to Condit? Like, that's insane. Like, Matt won that round. I know Condit switched it towards the end. That was a real enjoyable fight. I dug it. It was one of those fights that really give you that nostalgia feeling because you remember some of the highlights of these guys' careers. And, man, Carlos, it's nice to see him piecing together two wins in a row. I think the highlight of the fight has to have been kind of like this foot sweep type takedown he got in Brown. I think it was round two. I hope Condit resigns to the UFC, but, I mean, he would be a great addition to any roster. And then, I think Max Holloway is the best featherweight in the world. I think I would love to see Holloway, Patricia Pitbull. We won't see that. And then, the other two knockouts. I mean, Puno Soriano is a star in the making. He's got a great personality, interesting fight style. I think the gas tank will probably end up being something that is an issue for him. But against a very tough fighter, Dusko Todorovic, who, is tough as hell. It was a great win. Funny moment when the mouthpiece got stuck in between the cage and then the canvas in that one. I know Dana mentioned that as a what else can go wrong. This is the first fight on ABC, but hey, man, they got the mouthpiece back in, got the finish. We had the finish of Chirico, and then Li Jingliang. I mean, brutal win over Ponzinibbio. You feel so bad for Ponzinibbio, who finally returns back to the cage and only to lose to Li. But I mean, Li is a special cat as a Chinese welterweight. I mean, this guy, oof. His stand-up is scary, and I think Jingling is going to have a big year.
Yeah, it's obviously you feel for Ponzinibbio. Of course, he had all the health issues that had kept him out on the sideline. So it was a good night of fights, and look, that main card absolutely delivered on ABC, and that's exactly what the UFC was hoping for. In terms of that matchup, we'll mention that on the last episode of the MMA Report podcast, I did speak with Eric Anders, who did talk to me about how he is now training at Fight Ready there in Arizona. He is doing his entire camp in Arizona for this one, leaving his home state of Alabama. So interesting to kind of see what he looks like. Also, on the last episode of the podcast, I spoke to Montel Williams Jr. Yes, that is the son of Montel Williams. He is a undefeated fighter training out of Las Vegas. So if you did not have a chance to check out that podcast, you can hit that right here on the previous episode, or both those interviews are up on the MMAreport.com. So you can check it out there as well. I'm actually recording some more interviews here today, so look out for that. Daniel, anything else you want to mention before we get out of here on this episode?
All I want to mention is this. I want this on the record. Conor McGregor Jr. is going to be one hell of a UFC fighter one day. Watching that countdown show where the guy's already in the gym reminded me of a young Tiger Woods as a little kid hitting a golf club. So I'll put this on the record, Jason. Conor McGregor Jr., UFC star one day.
Yeah, that's probably, I think you're probably right on that one, but yeah, it's interesting. I also saw someone note about, they were talking about Embedded and the footage of the flight from Las Vegas, how everyone is wearing masks except Dana White. And I'm like, yeah, not surprised.
Yeah, not surprised at all. I mean, the only I'm not surprised of that. I'm not surprised of you know, one of my favorite players asking to leave my city. I mean, between James Harden and Deshaun Watson, I'm not. I'm a factory of sadness. You know, so I think I'm done with sports now. You know how demoralizing it is to watch a sports team and in both your two favorite sports, the best player just wants to leave. It sucks, Jason. It sucks.
Look, I'll just say this: kudos to the Rockets for what they got. I thought they did amazing. But yeah, it's I get you. It's tough right now to be a Houston.
And the damn Nets are gonna win the title.
No way.
You don't think so? You don't think so?
First off, okay, who is going to take a back seat in that trio? First, yeah, three Kyrie guys who all.
Kyrie won't even be in the car. He's going to be somewhere else. But they don't need Kyrie.
I saw a meme the other day. I was talking about this on my NBA show in Osmo, where it was the three of them all trying to steal the ball from each other at the end of the game because they all want the ball.
That's not realistic because James Harden doesn't play defense.
Oh, no. So look, they were awful defensively. They're going to be even worse defensively. But I did laugh on, you know, NBA on TNT is the best studio show there is. And I love Barkley going, here's the Nets new offense. Dribble, 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 2 seconds, 1 second, shoot.
Yeah, I mean, they are great. They are great.
Dude, wow. That studio show is amazing. And the chemistry that the four of those guys have together, it's unbelievable. I mean, look, I'm a big NBA guy, but yeah, that studio show is unbelievable. Yeah, I feel bad for your Rockets, man. It's you know, just kind of the way that unfolded. I feel like at some point, like, there is going to be a story told, like a 30 for 30 type thing of what, like, those first 10 games were like as a part of that organization.
There's going to be a 30 for 30 about the city of Houston, and it's going to start off with the Astros cheating scandal. Because after that happened, I mean, the damn city's been cursed. I mean, the fact that Deshaun Watson, who's the best quarterback in franchise history, wants to, that's so bad. That is so bad, and it sucks. And I hope we fire our, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to wish any ill will, but if I'm choosing between Deshaun Watson or Jack Easterby, I'm taking the franchise quarterback. I love you, Jack. I mean, you can go somewhere else, but I need Watson in my life. I need Watson in my life, and he doesn't want to be in my life, Jason, and it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. Yeah. I don't want Matt Schaub to be the best, the passing yards holder in franchise history.
Yeah, you got to look at the final four in the NFL. You got to have a quarterback to win it all, plain and simple. It's not hard math to figure out. You got to have that quarterback, and if you don't, you're not gonna make it this far.
Yeah, I know all about that, man. I know all about that, and you know, I'm glad that you have your quarterback, man. And I really wish you well. I am rooting for you, and you know, you deserve another Super Bowl in your life, and I hope you get it.
Yeah, it's I actually started with the Bucks Radio Network 2 years after the Super Bowl there in 2002. January 2003 was when they won it all. And so, yeah, it's, man, these games are stressful for me. They're so stressful for me at this point. You know, it is, I tell people I've got my family, my wife, you know, and parents and grandparents and all that. But then there's my Bucks family. And, yeah, it's a fun time right now. So looking forward to, Green Bay being nice, cold, apparently 30 degrees, 60% chance of snow. So it's going to be a good cold one there in Green Bay. Look, I'm a Florida boy, man. Give me my 75, 80 degree weather. I'm good with that. I need flip flop weather, but looking forward to watching UFC 257 on Saturday night. Of course, be sure to check out our sponsor this week, and that is DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app now. Use a promo code MMAreport to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the weekend. That's promo code MMAreport to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. As always, I appreciate all the support that we get here on the podcast. Of course, be sure to leave that 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out a lot as well. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week on Wednesday with myself and Daniel. And then on Sunday is the interview edition of the podcast.
This is a Live Bold and Boss Up quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week's episode, we're chatting with our very own CEO, James Holly. This is one of my favorite things that you said, and I actually wrote this down in my notes, actually my phone, as you were going through it. Don't let things happen, make them happen.
Yeah, that's one of those you just take a moment and just let it sink in, right? Because I think we all can point to different aspects where maybe we haven't delivered as good as we can. And if we think back on it, we probably would call ourselves a passenger, right? And not the driver. And so I think from our organization standpoint, you know, this year, it's about stepping up, and that championship mindset is about actually going after it, right? It doesn't matter if it's COVID, if it's 2020, you know, there's bad things all around. Right. You know, things are going to challenge you, obstacles in your way, you know, but don't just let them happen. Go and make things happen. And every problem has a solution, but it's up to us to find that solution. And sometimes, you know, you've got to take the wheel and just drive it.
Live Bold and Boss Up with Stephanie Marchese and Ashley Jaraki can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com.